The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. We've had, we've had rain off and on all day long, and I wisely, not so wisely, didn't bring some things in from outside on Saturday, and so I thought, okay, yesterday I would, they were pretty wet after Sunday, after the rain and the hail that we got a little bit of down in South Auburn on Sunday, so I let them out, and I set them up where they would hang and dry. I mean, it's like cushions and things like that. God, they're much worse now. So, yeah, whatever. I was telling Dan, this is one of those days. This is a day where, good book.
You're suggesting not doing the show. Like, this is a good day to do something other than show.
Well, no, if you're not doing the show, it's a good day to just hang out and join us.
Well, no, I mean,
on the show. I mean, you can't get anything done really outside today. Not much at all. It's just one of those.
We're firmly in the off season, Bill. The off season.
Oh, there's no question about that.
The timeline has changed. The off season used to be. I mean, I remember.
Oh, the off season used to start about a month ago.
Well, I remember. when the off season started in January. So.
You had recruiting.
You did.
Used to have signing day.
Okay.
February.
So the off season started on signing day.
Yeah. You're right, because basketball used to suck.
Yes.
Well, that's right.
In the pre-basketball relevance era of sports talk radio in Auburn.
It was, and that's when I was talking about starting a show that went year-round, convincing management that there was something other than, fall football, recruiting, and then spring football. That really was the only thing that the feeling was there was only interest in that because everything else wasn't any good.
It's something that folks haven't had to deal with lately, and especially with the run the men's basketball program has had at Auburn in the last 5-6 seasons. But I mean, when you go into the conference, and I don't want to say this was always happening with Ellis, but there was a stretch at the end of Cliff Ellis, beginning of Jeff Lebo, where when you're so significantly overmatched by a considerable part of the conference, there's really not much to talk about on the basketball front after a couple of conference games.
I mean, no,
you're
right.
It really was.
You're
and
right.
That would, I mean, and then you're talking, yes, there's recruiting build up to signing day, but there was a long period of time where you're previewing next football season.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what spring is about.
Any little morsel of information, any little globule of information you could find, a half an atom of information would still you could go a long way. If you heard a tackle was moving to guard, you could get a week out of it because
Jeremiah Wright would have been news every other week.
Oh, you're right.
That's absolutely right.
The problem was if there was any news, it was usually bad news.
Yeah, so, it was usually
that's fair.
So and so because
it's from the blotter.
That was also back before every player was always here for the entire summer too. And you had to worry about what were they doing at home. And yeah, things have changed.
I mean, it's becoming more. It's almost college football is slowly starting to follow that NFL model where the NFL structures the offseason where there's one big like tentpole event every single month. So there's something to kind of.
Hey, we got one tomorrow.
Exactly.
Got one coming tomorrow.
With the transfer portal and with the schedule tomorrow, I mean, it's slowly becoming that.
Well, the portal, I mean, keep in mind the portal is still open it's open in baseball, but there's also, there are men's basketball graduate transfers and people who entered the portal when it was open that still haven't landed on a destination.
Hey, they're football players that haven't found destinations yet. There are hundreds. As far as Auburn's concerned, the portal is done for right now.
That's the thing to keep in mind, right? Is that the portal is only, I mean, the dates that apply to the transfer portal.
It's just when you can enter.
Are dates that players have to declare. They're not necessarily dates where, you don't have to have a decision made by a certain time. And you're getting graduate transfers that are making themselves available, right? I mean, you had the player from Louisiana decided last week. He was deciding to change teams, and he can do that because he's a graduate student with an extra year of eligibility. Mm-hmm. But you could have, I don't know how many more we're going to have on that front, but I mean, the possibility of a big name popping up in men's basketball. We were talking about Jordan Brown, the Louisiana player, Carter. I mean, that's a guy who it sounds like, and I don't want to assume too much in this situation, sounds like he was a guy who saw how many big time programs need front court help now.
Yeah, when you look out there and go, oh, you know, I could jump into the SEC and there's a few schools where I could start.
I don't know the NIL figures. We all hear wild, you know, a wild spectrum of numbers as far as what it sounds like. But I mean, if a guy like that is, you know, you're a 20-9 Sun Belt post with 1 year of eligibility left, and you look and Kentucky's out there.
They've got seven players and need something.
Kentucky's out there, and you assume you can probably shake the, you know, shake some NIL money loose on that front to make, you know, Kentucky your first choice. Plus, he signed, as Bill points out, he signed with Musselman out of high school when Musselman was the head coach in Nevada. And so Arkansas is a player whenever anyone jumps into the transfer portal. You start a bidding war between Kentucky and Arkansas as a post, and you're talking generational money for 1 year of college basketball possibilities. You know, so that's it is wild how we drifted into there used to be a desert.
There was a dearth of information. There was hardly anything going on. I mean, look, now let's see. The NBA finals are done. The Denver Nuggets with their first ever title. That picked up last night. The Super Regionals are set. We can talk about the eight teams that are there and interesting finishes. The two games last night, they were interesting stories. We can talk about that. We've got, as we said, news coming tomorrow with the schedule. Not necessarily the schedule, I don't think. It's going to be the list of SEC opponents for each team. Hopefully, I'm hopeful and I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll find out at least who you're playing where. Not necessarily when, but who you're playing where you're going to be playing home or away.
You think we're going to have four home, four road for everybody?
I think you'll know who is at home, because I think some of it, like we've been saying, I don't think they want to make any team go to another particular school back-to-back years. So they're going to keep some of the teams that were already on the schedule for next year. So I would think it would make sense to go ahead and release where all of the eight conference games are going to be
played.
I want
all three of us, and maybe we could do it now at the top of our heads, or we could think about it for a little while. I want all three of us to predict Auburn's eight opponents on tomorrow's special.
Right this second?
Do you have eight in mind right now?
I thought we'd go ahead and take care of business and stuff. I was just talking about what all's going to be on the show.
Oh, yeah, we're moving around. But since we got the unveiling tomorrow night on the SEC Network, I figure we got to get our predictions on the board.
Well, today or tomorrow. I mean, we'll be off the air before they're done. But, I mean, yeah, we'll put them out there as we go. We'd like your thoughts, too. Who do you think the SEC is going to give Auburn? And who would you like the SEC to give Auburn? And of course, I mean, you just pick the bottom teams in the league. But we'll do that. I want to let you know that Barrett Salee should be back with us. I believe it's been a couple of weeks at least since we've had Barrett on. So he'll be on this afternoon in about 20 to 25 minutes. Now, Jake Crane, who's usually with us in the 5 o'clock hour, though, he's got some things going on today. So he'll be on with us on Friday. So that's sort of the schedule for today. And as we get underway, we'll go ahead and remind you that hour number one of the drive, brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They're also the sponsor of our hotline, where you can call us. And the number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Bill, do we have, I don't want to get into it too much, we have some podcast news, right? Things appear to be...
Yeah. Jacob updating me as we came in that the podcasts are back on Spotify. Google and Spotify, Apple has okayed it, but it's, I guess we're waiting for for it to just be reposted there on Apple. But hopefully you'll be able to find the Drive podcasts where you used to find them now.
Yes, that sounds like things are moving in the right direction, and we'll have that fixed on pretty much every platform soon. Podcasts of the Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also present the text box. And so, we appreciate everything that Southeastern Industrial Contractors does for us, and we appreciate the folks who helped get the podcast fixed as we get through the last couple of weeks.
All right, again, 334-321-1390. You want to jump right into it, then we'll get into the prediction. You want to talk about the stuff that let's talk about a little bit about the sports from yesterday.
Sure. What's your top?
I don't know. I mean, the Nuggets finally, getting their first
Tennessee
NBA title. The Tennessee win over Southern Miss. Now, mm-hmm. In hindsight, do you think Southern Miss almost wishes that it had rained out and they could go, we should be there? I don't know. I mean, Tennessee's pitching last night dominant.
Yeah, they got rained out by the Tennessee Volunteers.
Southern Miss, that slugging Southern Miss team that mm-hmm. we saw here in Auburn, absolutely shut down the last game and a half by Tennessee.
Well, and the pitching has never been the issue for Tennessee. It's that offense that sometimes I think can get a little spotty. I mean, congrats, you made it to Omaha. You draw
now. You've got LSU.
Schemes,
that's right.
And LSU. And the last time you saw an SEC team was in Hoover when you got one hit by A&M. So I'm very interested to see how this Tennessee offense looks against Paul Skeens, because I think he's the best college pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hold it against Tennessee if they don't perform well against Skeens either.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done so well. It's going to be, I think anybody who drew LSU in the first game was going to be in for a problem, because Paul Skeens has performed as well as he has all season long. The issue, I think, for Tennessee, like you said, that offense can sometimes, especially away from home. I mean, they seem to be, more than anyone else left in the field, the splits between what you get in Knoxville with Tennessee and what you get on the road are concerning enough. They were, several games under 500 on the.
Yeah, but they've now went to Clemson won, and then went to Southern Miss and won. They were at one time 4-12 on the road.
Now 7-13.
Yeah. Won three of their last four on the road.
I mean, if you get past Skeens,
33-5 at home.
If you get past Skeens,
then LSU's pitchers are human.
And LSU's in big trouble if they don't win that game. I mean, I wonder if it's more important for LSU to win the game.
I think absolutely it is,
because LSU has virtually no chance of winning.
Put LSU in the losers bracket without Skeens for a couple of days.
At every single turn in this postseason, every day Skeens goes, LSU has to win. If they don't win, then they're in trouble.
Who you got right now? Who wins it all? College Baseball World Series.
Florida.
Wake still looks really good.
Yeah, I look at Caglione and that Florida team.
You guys took my choices.
What is that? Top two seeds.
I'll take,
Oral Roberts.
No, give me LSU. Oh. Give me Skeens. I think they'll find a way after navigating. Great lineup too.
Virginia is my dark horse pick. I think that they're who I would pick after Florida.
I wonder. We were talking about it yesterday with Matthews. Because you could have Wyatt Langford from Florida and Dylan Cruz from LSU are both candidates to go first overall in the draft later this year to the Pirates. It sounds like the Pirates aren't going to take Skeens. Like they don't want to take a pitcher, and they're going to take a toolsy outfielder. If it's Dylan Cruz 1, it'll probably be Skeens 2 to the Nationals, and LSU will have the top two picks in the Major League Baseball draft. Not sure how many times a school has ever delivered 1 and 2 in the same draft, but it's on the board if the Pirates decide to take Dylan Cruz. And we saw something earlier this year from I think it was ESPN.com's prospect expert. He was ranking a couple months into the season, acknowledging that some prospects have been called up already, re-ranking them based on what they've done in the minors this year. He said that Cruz and Skeens immediately become two of the top 20 prospects in the minor leagues the moment they're drafted, and Langford is just outside the top 25. So, I mean, it's remarkable. And he doesn't feel that way about a lot of the talent on the board, but he feels that way about the top three players, all of whom happen to be from the SEC. And I think they all have a decent shot of winning it all, Florida
yeah.
and LSU.
I mean, I think four of the top seven picks in this draft are going to be SEC kids because you got the Gonzalez, the shortstop at Ole Miss that everybody has. The numbers are good. They don't blow you away, but everybody loves his upside.
I think Tennessee's got a pitcher in the top 10 mm-hmm. as well in most people's drafts.
You've got all these names out of the SEC, and the SEC puts out more talent than anybody else. But, I mean, Ben McDonald, I think it was Ben McDonald doing the LSU series this weekend when Skeens was on the mound. He's like, you could plug this guy into a major league pitching staff right now, and he would fit in. He's that good. He's that special.
Well, yeah. Well, it's becoming less and less unusual for guys to be there. And I mean, if not at the end of the year that they're drafted, the next year. I mean, you're seeing some guys move in.
I mean,
that
could
quickly.
Could you see a scenario where you see Skeens throw in the College World Series and in a major league season in the same year? Because you saw that with Brandon Finnegan a few years back with TCU. He pitched in the College World Series and the World Series.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's more likely that, I mean, it's less likely if he's with the Nats.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
why would they bring him up in mm-hmm. September?
There was, you know, 15 years ago when David Price was the first overall pick of the Tampa
Bay Rays.
Right,
they used him out of the pen.
And they used him out of the pen in the playoffs that season. I mean, it's happened before with guys that are fresh, but I think with the Nationals, they may, especially if
they don't want his clock, clock started.
If they're out of it, they may slow play it just to give themselves an extra year of team control. Because they're not going to play games that matter in September, it seems like, based on mm-hmm. where the standings are right now.
In that 2014 season, I think Brandon Finnegan became the first person to ever pitch in the College World Series and the World Series in the same year.
Let me ask you, Bill. Nationals probably aren't going to play games that matter in September.
Yeah, I agree.
Are the Marlins?
Maybe. They're seven games over 500 right now. They're shopping.
The Braves, right?
They're shopping right now.
Might the Marlins possibly play some games that matter? Because tell you what, history tells you when that team makes the playoffs.
Look out.
I mean, they're prickly. But no, especially if they add a piece or two.
They're like looking for a catcher. If they can find a catcher. And they've got
Grandal.
Huh?
Grandal's the answer if you want a catcher. The White Sox stink, right?
Yeah, although I don't know
contract
that
year.
They may be going for somebody. I'm thinking they may go for like a Joey Bart.
Ooh, okay.
Somebody that they feel like, because I don't know that I don't know this ownership is ready to try to bring in an old guy, try to win, and then cash it in.
Go get Blake Sable. Because the Giants feel set at catcher.
They're happy with. I mean, they're looking for a guy that can give them some pop and is a solid defensive catcher.
The Royals aren't trading their guy. Right?
No. They've already said.
Tell you who needs to trade their guys: the Cardinals. That situation is spoiled.
That's the other guy the Marlins are.
And it's not his fault.
No, the guy the Marlins are targeting is Ivan Herrera, the Cardinals minor league catching prospect.
Contreras has to get out of there. That thing is going.
I'll tell you who's going to get out of there. It's going to be the manager.
That's fair.
That's what's going to happen there. All right, we're just getting underway here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan, and that's Carter at the controls. Sticking around from on the line. They locked him in, so he's with us for the duration here. Love for you to join in here on the Tuesday Drive.
You're live on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, got Carter at the controls. And Carter, you came across something really interesting there as we went to break. There's going to be a very special
Field of Dreams game between the San Francisco Giants and the St. Louis Cardinals next year at Rickwood Field in Birmingham.
Historic Rickwood Field in Birmingham. I don't know if you guys ever been there?
I've never been.
I've played a game there, actually.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done a broadcast there.
How is it as far as like the maintenance and like have they kept it up and it's I mean, I'm sure they'll do everything they can if there's going to be a Major League Baseball game there next year.
When I played, not really. I mean, okay. Nobody really touches it all that often anymore. Do the Barons still play the Rickwood Classic game anymore?
I don't know if they still do. They used to, but I thought they'd stopped it. They have some special games that are there. I haven't been there in years. No, it was not in great shape.
Bill, you mentioned that during the break that Willie
updated. I know they have tried to, you know, fix it up.
Well, and Willie Mays is
a native of Birmingham.
Legendary giant Willie absolutely. Mays is a native of Birmingham, and the St. Louis.
I'd say the legendary, the most legendary giant.
The city of all time. Although there's another one. There's another one right there. Hmm. Barry Bonds, I would say, would be
Willie Mays is probably the most beloved.
I would agree. I would say
giant ever.
I know.
Because he went from New York to San Francisco.
I know. I mean, Bonds had an incredible run as
yes,
a giant.
Did. Oh, he absolutely.
He would probably be next. There's also other issues there with Barry Bonds.
I mean, there are a few. I mean, the Giants and Cardinals, man.
Oh, and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Tremendous history.
And St. Louis also has a tremendous history of Negro League basketball, of Negro League baseball, because they have the several different. I don't know if not the Cardinals organization necessarily, but the city.
No.
The city of St. Louis has ties mm-hmm. to Negro League baseball, so they will. It makes sense that they would be doing a game.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Presumably,
idea?
Honor,
okay,
yeah.
Any idea when it's going to be?
I don't think that's been announced yet. Okay. By the way, the Rickwood Classic, it appears the last year I can find was 2018.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's been a okay. few years. But I believe there's still some things that are going on there at Rickwood.
You had, I guess you had UAB play a game there this past year.
Okay.
Or this on May 2nd or something, I think.
Okay. I was thinking there were still occasionally some games that are played there, and you know I know the attempts have been to preserve it as best as possible.
That'll be cool.
Yeah,
yeah. That'll be a cool event. And we've been proponents before of playing major league baseball games
being played.
I think field trip games are like
minor league or college sites.
Oh, I think it would be a blast.
I used to love spring training games.
You know, one of my harebrained ideas is I think every Major League Baseball team should at least one weekend a season go play at the AAA or the AA or even the Single A, like whatever,
yeah.
You know, wherever you can go, like take the show on the road and go play at a market that is related to the franchise because it's the home of the AA affiliate or the AAA affiliate, but you don't actually play the major league games. Are there all that? I mean, if the Rays came to Montgomery or the Marlins came to,
that'd be cool.
That's the Blue Wahoos, right? I think Pensacola is a Miami affiliate.
It is.
Like you could, you know, those kind of games. I mean, just in the Southeast, but there's examples of that all over. You don't have to do it all in the same weekend. I just think it'd be fun to have a field trip like that. And I think games honoring the past and honoring important figures in baseball history are great too. So yeah, that thing in Birmingham is going
to
be great.
So Rickwood seems to. I found a schedule for their summer. They host a lot of high school travel ball tournaments. Perfect
okay.
Game has two tournaments, like two big tournaments at Rickwood.
Oh, that's cool.
Later this summer, the Savannah Bananas here in 11 days play a game there as well.
That will be a show.
Yeah,
that'll be a real show.
The Savannah Bananas yeah. and their antics will be coming to Birmingham. Hey, we were talking about, and we're going to talk about this a little bit with Barrett Salee in the next segment too, the SEC schedule and
right.
what the future could look like. Carter, do you think with the SEC announcing everyone's opponents, do you think they will put an Alabama-Georgia game on the schedule in 2024?
Oh, I think they might, because it just feels like they never play each other in the regular season. I think they might because, I mean, they've already
They're not going to do it in 25, I don't think. So 24 would make a lot of sense.
They'll throw Alabama-Georgia on there and probably Alabama-Oklahoma as well.
Well, I'm a proponent that everyone plays Oklahoma or Texas. Like,
yeah.
I think everyone should know of the 14 yeah, member schools.
It will be a travesty if they don't.
Right. If someone should.
They each have seven games. There's 14 teams.
Yeah. It's
who's going to get left out? Why should somebody get left out
because
one of the new teams?
Yeah, I mean, because Arkansas or Texas A&M wants both Texas for Oklahoma. Like, get out of here with that. Like, I think you could give everyone, you could find a way to keep everyone happy with seven games for Oklahoma, seven games for Texas.
You can have one year where in this transition period, if you end
and
up
they're still
going
playing each
nine.
Other. I mean, you still have, you know, they still have room for Texas versus Oklahoma as mm-hmm. the eighth game. You're not going to touch that thing. And I imagine the SEC is going to work hard to keep that tradition going. But Yeah, you could also have games like Texas, Texas A&M, and also sending Oklahoma and Texas to unfamiliar places. I imagine there are places in the SEC. Have either of those?
Well, I'm sure there are quite a few places they haven't. See, Texas has been to Auburn.
Has Oklahoma played a road game at Auburn before?
No.
See, yeah, put that one on the schedule. Absolutely. For, you know, to have
Auburn and Oklahoma have only played in New Orleans, I believe.
Yeah, they played in 16. And that Sugar Bowl, which
and
was
they played.
I went to that one, and Baker Mayfield's jersey didn't touch the turf one time.
And they played in 71, or say, I guess it was the 72 January New Year's Day of 72.
Yeah, I think it'd be great to have Oklahoma, and especially if you're assuming you're keeping Georgia and Alabama where they are, and they're both going to be road games for Auburn in 24. Then yeah, I think Oklahoma at Auburn makes a ton of sense as a game the SEC should put on the schedule.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll chat with Barrett Salee on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan got Carter at the controls. And we're going to head to the Kia of Auburn hotline. Welcome in our good friend from CBSSports.com and SiriusXM, Barrett Salee, not coaching today?
No, not today. We didn't get a feel for Tuesday. That's what I found this summer is that the more travel teams that exist, the fewer fields that actually exist. So no practice today, but we do the next couple of days.
Oh, okay. Well, we're fortunate. Great to have you on the day before, you know, a day that everybody's looking forward to. Tomorrow we get to find out who everybody in the SEC is going to be facing for 2024.
Yeah, it's, you know, this is all the schedule stuff, you know, needs to be in television form. The SEC has done that, for a few years now on SEC mm-hmm. Network. The Big Ten has done it as well. They did it last week. And for a new matrix, for a 1 year temporary new format, this is a perfect way. I wouldn't say to get people excited about it, just to create conversation and keep the SEC and college football in the news during what is a generally slow time. So I'm excited to see it. You know, Greg said that they would try to keep as many important rivalries as possible, which makes me think that Auburn-Georgia will be something that happens. But, you know, I'm interested to see what happens with Arkansas versus Missouri and Arkansas versus LSU and LSU-Bama. And, you know, I want to know if they're going to try to keep remnants of the divisions intact or if they're truly trying to go into a new era of divisionless football. That's the one thing that's not been answered yet.
No, I've been back and forth. I mean, the easiest thing to do would keep it very similar to division play, but that would be sort of boring.
Yeah, I mean, it would be. I mean, it absolutely would be. And everyone talks about how, you know, you get tired of seeing the same teams over and over again. And granted, the long-term permanent rotation, you know, I think is going to be a little different. But if we're only going 1 year of this, let's get weird. You know, let's get really, really weird. I think that might be part of it, knowing that they might go back to at least trying to keep some of the division remnants intact. But, you know, you don't have to. This is 1 year. You can get super wild like they did during the COVID year. Mm-hmm. The COVID year was very successful. And so they've got a chance with this, you know, 1 year can that's been kicked down the road to try to create something fun again.
Yeah, I just wonder if, you know, as you said, they're going to try to preserve rivalries. There are a couple of teams in this league that, I mean, a lot of the teams in their own division consider them rivals, right? You think about Georgia and Florida and to an extent Tennessee in the East. I imagine teams like Vanderbilt and South Carolina and Kentucky want to keep playing those games home and on the road and keep those sort of things alive. In the West, you look at Alabama, I think especially look at LSU. Like a lot of yeah. those division games feel like rivalries. And so, yeah, I mean, on one hand, you could get weird and start doing more matchups that you don't see every year. But I also see why those teams might want to keep playing some of those teams, you know, some of these games that they've, you know, they've played either historically or in the last 30 years since the divisions were introduced.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned LSU. It's funny because they don't have an in-state rival, so they just hate everybody, right? Mm-hmm.
And everybody hates them.
Magnolia Bowl versus yeah. Ole Miss. You know, Magnolia Bowl versus Ole Miss. We know about LSU Auburn. We know about LSU Alabama. Texas A&M LSU has been played, like, what, 60 times? They manufactured the Golden Boot rivalry yep. between Arkansas and LSU. Like, it's one of those things where I think LSU fans are going to be missing, like, four or five rivalries.
And LSU Florida, too. You got
yeah,
Florida.
Yeah, LSU Florida. Yeah. I mean, it's just they have so many. And you know, it's sort of like one of those things where, you know, Tennessee's kind of in the same spot. Like, there's no one to truly hate, so they just kind of hate everybody, which is fine.
Now, the other thing that Greg Sankey said was they want to balance it as much as possible. Georgia's the team, when you look at the schedule for 2023, Georgia's got the easiest schedule of anyone that even thinks they're a contender, and they are, of course, as talented as anyone. Do Georgia and Alabama perhaps play in the regular season, or do you worry about setting up a game that could be a rematch later?
Well, if I'm – that one thing about trying to maintain competitive balance, you know, it bothered me with the Big Ten, and if that's going to be part of this with the SEC, it bothers me too. Because the SEC, I think in part – a part of its success was due to the fact that it actually does treat every team, every member institution as equal. I know people say, well, they favor Alabama. No, they don't. Like, the part of the success is that a rising tide lifts all boats, and that's what the SEC has come to know for a long time. So if they start to worry about competitive balance, I mean, how would you like to go to Vandy's AD or Mississippi State's AD and say, hey, you know what? Your football team's kind of sucks, so we're going to change the way that we schedule you accordingly. That's not cool, like, right? That's not how I think the SEC should operate. And
so you don't. I just want to be clear here, Barrett. So you don't think they should be paying attention to like the last 4 years or the last 5 years and trying to balance a schedule accordingly? They should just be
They should be mixing it up
at a little bit more of a. You think they should favor rivalries or randomness and chaos? Where are you going there?
I think you need to have rivalries, but I mean, trying to figure out which team's going to be good and which team's going to be bad on an annual basis, we can't even do that. You know, we can't even figure out which players are going to be on which roster. And the SEC is going to sit there and try to schedule 2, 3, 4 years out, you know, based on overall merit. Like, not only does that seem crazy, it's impossible. And so I don't like that. I think in the NFL, you can sort of do it because you know what rosters are going to look like on a pretty much annual basis, or at least you have an idea. How do we know that Mississippi State isn't going to get a massive transfer quarterback and be really, really good 1 year? Like, that's just – it's not the way to go about it. And I think it would cause more animosity behind the scenes than it's worth. And I don't think it's the right way to do it.
I just don't know. It seems like I feel being a numbers guy that it wouldn't be that impossible. And you can adjust these things every couple of years.
Yeah,
I don't want a long-term deal.
See, I wouldn't want to see what the NFL does where they start matching things up where it's like, okay, well, because you finished in last place and you finished, you know what I mean? Like the NFL has a system that takes into account where you finished last year when they decide next year's schedule and the opponents you face. But I think the idea of, okay, well, if we're doing a one-year only schedule, if you're either using a point system where you weigh, the most successful team versus the 16th most successful team over the last 3 years or the last 5 years or something, you figure out some way to do
it. Go heavy on last year. I mean, especially if you're talking about balancing it just for 1 year to see how things go, I think that'd be fun.
But I agree with the idea that first and foremost, preserve the rivalries. And what's crazy about preserving rivalries is, like the question I asked Barrett, you have some teams that have the argument they've got six or seven rivalries.
Yeah, do you do it like the Big Ten and not have, I'd never really thought of the Big Ten's version until they came out with it. And I went, oh, that's interesting that you have Iowa with three permanent opponents, Penn State with none, and then others one or two. Now, that is mind-boggling. That's some serious math there. That's not simple math there.
No, it's not. They the Big Ten favors academics, right? Like they want teams that are in the AAU. Well, the schedule makers must have got.
Oh, they had high marks, no question.
I mean, I don't even know how you could do that, but I think that is overcomplicating things. I think as well, and the fact that Penn State, we're all old enough to remember when Penn State was not a Big Ten team. In the grand scheme of it is still one of the relatively new members. But to have zero full-time permanent opponents, I don't know. I don't like that. If I'm a Penn State fan, I really hate that. They're trying to be different. They're trying to sell themselves to advertisers. They're trying to make sure that they have at least one and usually two or three extremely compelling games for whatever reason every single week. And I guess this is the way they think they're going to go about doing it. There's no way the SEC makes it that complicated.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and we expect the SEC. I mean, this isn't the end of the SEC adjusting the schedule, too, because there's still the chance that there's a ninth conference game before long. Barry, you expect where are you on the SEC eventually getting to nine? Do you think that the 2024 season is a one-year blip and they'll be able to get it ironed out with ESPN in time for 2025, or do you think the SEC could stay at eight for a little bit longer than that?
I think that it might be a one-year kick the can down the road situation based on how TV evolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one sort of thing that's changed, because we've known the schedule is going to have to change since July of 21, and I don't think that we expected the SEC's only TV partner to struggle financially, right? So I think a lot depends on how they change that and how they evolve and how they deliver not just football program, just programming in general. And that is going to be, I think, the ultimate point in which how this is decided. I mean, I think even the teams that voted for the 8-game schedule know it's going to be the 9-game schedule. They just wanted to dig their heels in to try to leverage their opinion for something that benefits them. But the more the financial, I think the more the television delivery methods change and evolve, the more likely it is that the SEC kind of sticks to what they're going to do this year and say, or 2024, I should say, and have an 8-game schedule, protect the game, and then draw the rest out of a hat or whatever, do whatever they do, because ESPN can't pay, or at least I don't know the finances, but they don't seem to want to pay for
not yet, for sure.
Golden Goose. I'm glad you brought that up, Bear, because I think it's to decode a little bit of that television delivery stuff. If you look at the expectation that ESPN would add an extra $80 or $100 million to the SEC's deal in exchange for that ninth conference game, and people would think, well, it's ESPN, it's Disney, that money, it'll pop in, they've got it somewhere. The number that would worry decision makers at ESPN is you look at the number of people that were subscribing to basic cable 2 years ago or 4 years ago or 6 years ago versus the number of homes that have basic cable today, and the fact that those graphs seem to be going down consistently, I think would worry any. I mean, we're seeing this with rights deals for other leagues and for other sports properties, that I think cable networks are a little apprehensive to sign a big rights deal right now because they're not sure what 5 years from now looks like if you're in the business of providing someone content through basic cable.
Yeah, and I think it was the Sports Business Journal, what, a month or so ago, said that reported that ESPN considering going fully over the top, which, I mean, if that's going to happen, then that completely changes not just what their products are, but everything, the entire industry. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the rub right now is you want to make decisions, but I think even looking at the Big Ten schedule model, it gives itself a ton of flexibility in terms of what it does 5-10 years down the road. I think that's why part of the reason why they made it so complicated and so flexible. And the SEC, I think, is going to go the other way. I mean, if they're just going to kick the can down the road and do what works, or at least what they think is going to work right now, it gives ESPN plenty of time to figure out what it's going to do from a financial and from a delivery standpoint.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to, at least for the time being, follow the old KISS format. You know, keep it simple, stupid. So, I mean, not that that's for the fans or anything, but, yeah, it sort of is, to try to explain what's going on. Barrett, great to have you back. Tell everybody what you've got going on, what's coming up. Obviously, we're all waiting for the news from tomorrow. What have you got going?
Well, we're ranking position rooms this week on the site. I did running backs yesterday. One of my colleagues did wide receiver / tight end today. Quarterback's coming tomorrow. So, you know, we're filling the offseason with stuff that people love, and rankings always are a part of that. And then, yeah, we'll have full coverage of the SEC show tomorrow night. I'll have a column up after that. And anything else that breaks over the next week or two, we've got you covered.
Great stuff, Barrett. Man, thanks a lot. Good luck when you get back out on the field, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, y'all. See you.
All right, Barrett Salee joining us, as he does most Tuesdays. You know, we don't have conflicts, but yeah, great guy and great stuff with Barrett. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Time to churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final couple of minutes here of hour number one. Yeah, our thanks to Barrett Salee for joining us. And again, hopefully you got a chance to hear it. I love being able to say, but if you missed it, check out the app.
That's right. Check out the podcast. You can get it however you get your podcast. We're still working to fix the Apple podcast channel, but we're
confident that that will be fixed soon.
We've got the Spotify link working again. You can get the shows on ESPNAU.com or search your favorite podcasting platform and find The Drive with Bill Cameron. Apologies for the last couple of weeks. It was a technical snafu, Bill, but we're working on getting everything ironed out, and it seems like things are trending in the right direction.
What'd you think? I mean, I was a little surprised that Barrett doesn't think that you can come up with a more balanced schedule.
He wants ping pong balls?
Is he becoming a bulldog? I mean, I know he's, you know, he's from Georgia. He's always lived there. He went to Auburn.
It's
like he's protecting Georgia. Georgia has had the easiest schedule. You need to toughen up Georgia. Absolutely. That's what I was talking about.
So bad.
And I get the idea that it's difficult to...
Oh, it is. To predict who's going to be good
with multiple years down the road. With a lot of confidence to guarantee, right.
A pretty good idea who's going to be good for the next year or two.
You can use history, you know, I think as long as you apply it evenly to every team, right? Like maybe you're not accurate, but at least you're a little bit fair. I do wonder if... I mean... I mean, look, maybe they, maybe
it wouldn't
they
be unfair to Vandy either. He was like acting like it would be unfair to Vandy to do that.
To give everyone four teams.
Give everyone Vandy's.
Well, no, but if you give everyone four teams from a top half and four teams from a bottom, or you shoot for a score or something like that.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know what team is being, you know, that's necessarily unfair to in that scenario. I do wonder, you know, the issue with making Georgia's schedule tougher is, if you add Georgia to an LSU schedule, or if you add Georgia to an Alabama schedule,
I'm adding Oklahoma Oklahoma or Texas to Georgia's schedule over a period of time. They're going to play them a little bit more, and have them. They're already going to be playing Alabama more than they have, LSU more than they have.
I could see in a one-off in 2024, though, them trying to sneak a Alabama-Georgia game in there just for the sake that it never happens.
Well, the thing is, what a huge game that is, too.
Exactly.
And then go to ESPN and say, but it's not going to be back on there in 25 unless we get more money and can go to a nine-game conference schedule.
I would hope that if we're not beholden to division play anymore, the conference will try to get an Alabama-Georgia or an LSU-Georgia game on the schedule in 2024 to match up, on top of the fact that everyone's playing either Texas or Oklahoma. I'd like to see a matchup between Georgia, a couple of the last few teams to win this league, right? Georgia, Alabama, and LSU.
Right.
Let's see them all play each other. And we know Alabama and LSU are going to play.
I'm pretty sure they're going to play.
We think
in 24.
We think Alabama and LSU are going to play.
All right. We'd love your thoughts. We're wide open in hour number two. Come on in and join us.
An Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill, Dan, Carter here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join in. We'll tell you how momentarily after let you know that hour number two of The Drive, brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And yes, you can get through to us on the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And that number to get you through is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available almost everywhere you listen to podcasts. We're fixing the Apple link at the moment. We'll have that fixed soon. Back on Spotify, Google. You can use ESPNAU.com as well. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
All right. We had Barrett Salee on with us in hour number one. Jake Crane, normally with us in the 5 o'clock hour on Tuesdays, has some things going on today. He will be joining the show on Friday. One of the things we were talking about is tomorrow night, the SEC opponents for each team will be unveiled on the SEC network. And we were talking with Barrett. Barrett, skeptical or really not wanting the SEC to try to balance the schedule. But we were talking about if you were going to do that. I know Dan tossed it. You tossed that out at the beginning of the show, right?
Oh, yeah. Who do you
come
want as your eight opponents?
Come up with your eight opponents for next year. So that's something that we can get into here shortly. I would like it, you know, shuffled up a little bit. I think, you know, for Auburn, you got to keep – I'm keeping Alabama and Georgia just because those are the traditional rivals. I want – since those games should be on the road, Oklahoma's never been to Auburn. I want Oklahoma coming in. The rest of the schedule should not be quite as challenging. I don't know how you're going to do that, really, but those are my top three. Those are my – My first three choices is to have those on there. Of course, who knows what Oklahoma is going to be in 2024? Will Brent Venables still be the Oklahoma coach? I mean, I know that sounds insane because he's just heading into year two.
That doesn't seem as crazy as it did a couple years ago.
Now that we've seen Auburn do it, we've seen schools quicker to pull the trigger.
No, I mean, if you
Oklahoma's not going to have Florida. A whole lot of patience.
What we were just talking about during the break.
Yeah, we were talking about Florida. Billy Napier needs to step it up this year.
I mean, we were writing the Norvell obituary at Florida State, right? I mean,
You got to do it.
Well, Willie Taggart only got 2 years at Florida State, right? I mean, I think there was.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, we've seen. Look, teams are less patient than ever before at places that expect winning. And think that coaches can immediately attract...
The money
attract,
that's being spent, yeah.
And think coaches should be attracting big-time talent immediately. If things don't feel like they're going in the right direction after year two, you might not get a year three. And if you do, you better win early in year three. Or, I mean, things are going to end because now it's also more advantageous to begin your coaching search earlier because you want to have that settled before the portal opens up. So, you know, I think we'll see more short coaching reigns at big-time programs.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see more in-season firings because I think teams will not feel like, oh, we got to let them finish out the year. No, you don't. Like, if you know you're firing a guy, it's irresponsible to let him finish out the year
because with the transfer portal you've got players leaving.
Absolutely,
you
want
to get to market, kind of. If you have a plan at all, you need to get to market because I know that was a lot of people's mindsets this past year with Brian Harsin. Let him see out the whole season. You can't do that anymore.
No.
That era is gone. If you're doing
losing
that,
ground every day,
exactly. I 100% agree, and I think your leader in the clubhouse for 2 year tenure right now is definitely Napier because that schedule is not very conducive to having a good season.
Bounce back. Yeah.
I mean, you open at Utah, who's just won the Pac-12 twice in a row, and you don't have Anthony Richardson this time. And you got Tennessee in week three, at Kentucky week five, at South Carolina week seven. Then you come off your bye and you've got Georgia and at LSU and FSU left. And that's not even counting Arkansas and at Missouri. Like, there's a chance it goes really south and they go 5-7, 4-8.
Yeah, and then they will go for a new coach.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think Florida and Oklahoma both seem like places where if you don't see a pretty drastic turnaround.
All right, Oklahoma's schedule, it's an interesting schedule.
It is.
Cristobal's not on that list, is he? I mean, that's not a situation where, like...
No way.
Right? I mean, like, that's... Because they just did that
after
with... Miami isn't a place where they need to... I mean, but if it's not going great at the end of year, too.
He'll get a little longer. All right, here's Oklahoma's schedule. They open up with Arkansas State, which is not easy. SMU and Tulsa are their first three.
SMU, but that's
three games that normally you would think, oh, Oklahoma rolls those.
SMU's going to be good.
I'm telling you.
We got our Auburn schedules ready.
Let me run through the rest of
Oklahoma. Okay, Oklahoma.
Then they're at Cincinnati. They've got Iowa State at home. They've got Texas and Dallas. They've got Central Florida. They're at Kansas.
Where are they? They're at Central Florida?
No, they're home against Central Florida. They're at Kansas, at Oklahoma State, West Virginia at home, at BYU, TCU at home.
Is that a conference game now?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is.
You got BYU, Cincy, Houston.
Oklahoma.
Right.
Oklahoma UCF is a conference game.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
But they better win those games.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, no Venable. I mean, it's not just about, I mean, yes, you're going to have to win, and I think they're going to have to show progress as the season goes on. I think things feel a little more,
seem more manageable than Florida.
Yeah. The Napier thing feels like it's doomed.
But we're not,
the conference that you just of the Power Five that you have the least feel for coming into 23? Because TCU lost every.
I just found out UCF's in it.
I'll tell you what, I feel. Well, I don't know. I feel
TCU's going to take a huge step back.
I think UConn's
in it. K-State's there. Where's Oklahoma? Is Texas finally going to do something?
I don't know. I feel better about the Big 12 than I do the Pac-12.
Texas and Oklahoma.
Well, but like, I mean, I can point to the Pac-12 and, oh, yeah, like the future. But this upcoming season, I can point to the Pac-12 and tell you who's going to be the best teams in that league. It's going to be Oregon, USC, Utah,
UCLA.
And Oregon State maybe a little bit too. And Washington. I mean, that's six teams. They're have a chance to be pretty good. Big 12, you could tell me
Florida's
TCU wins it, or you could tell me Iowa State wins it, and I'd be like, I could probably figure out a way that happens.
Florida opens at Utah, too. So, I mean, it could be an unfortunate beginning, depending on what happens. Although last year people thought that was going to happen, and Florida won the game, right? So, I mean, there's a chance. But, I think the conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day, because whenever a call doesn't go... Whenever a call goes against Texas or Oklahoma, people are going to think it's Big 12 referees punishing the outgoing teams. I think also true of UCLA and SC is that if they don't get favorable calls, people are going to think it's Pac-12 refs manipulating it because the teams are leaving the league. And I don't think that's what's going to be going on, but I don't want to guarantee anything either. So I think that's going to add an extra wrinkle to conference games, especially because when teams leave a league after a long time. A&M got this treatment on the way out of the Big 12, where it's like you're playing at places where you're never coming back, most likely, unless you schedule a home and home or something with this team in the future. And
you just follow them eventually.
But some fan bases react differently than others to the idea that we're never going to see you again. So I'm interested to see what kind of reception Texas and Oklahoma, USC and UCLA get in those situations, because I mean could be places where they never play another football game.
You brought up Florida at Utah to open this year. I just want to say that I think the difference from Anthony Richardson to Graham Mertz is rather large. I think that's going to show.
Mm-hmm. So while we were talking about this, my buddy Ty Richardson, we've had him on the show before. He's the Arkansas Hold That Line guy. He covers Arkansas football and basketball up in Fort Smith and other communities in Arkansas. So he put out his eight desired opponents for Arkansas, and he had Texas and Oklahoma both on his list. And I fired back with him. I said, hey, I'd like to see Texas and Oklahoma play everybody in the league, which means they can't play, nobody can have
any one team.
Yeah,
can't play one team.
Nobody can have both Texas and Oklahoma on their schedule. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got to pick one or the other. And he surprised me a little bit, because he said, Norman is really close to Fayetteville. That's the game I want to see the most on the Arkansas schedule. And then he tacks on, I'll happily go back to Sky Bar and Auburn if you guys will have me. Ty's a great guy. You should check out Hold That Line whenever you need Arkansas info. I was a little surprised to hear Oklahoma and Arkansas.
Would be a game
that some Arkansas people really want on their schedule.
So then maybe Arkansas would have to wait a year to play Texas, and their former Southwest Conference rival again. It's just
played them, right? They're very recently was an Arkansas, a couple of Arkansas-Texas games.
I mean, if you feel confident you're going to move to nine games and have the three permanent rivals, I kind of view that as this is your window to branch out and try something different for a year and see what happens, and then you can go right back to what you had planned initially if you want to.
Yeah, so who all did he have on there?
So he had, let me see if I can pull up his, it was, the home games were, fill a little time while I scroll through his time.
All right, anyway, I would have had,
all right, I got them.
I may have had the top four teams in the league on Auburn's schedule. With Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, and then if they stick with LSU, then they need to get four very, handleable games.
In 2024, is Oklahoma, are we sure Oklahoma's going to be better than Texas?
See, I don't know.
Well, that's when we get into projecting.
That's why I don't think so. Mm-hmm. So if you went based and the way I want to do this is base things over the last 4 years, but go more heavily on the most recent year. Go like 40% last year, 30% the year before, then 20, then 10.
If you were to fully balance that, what you would give Auburn, Vanderbilt, Missouri,
Arkansas,
State,
and South Carolina, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. So Ty Richardson's eight opponents for Arkansas, what he wanted. Well, let's not even worry about guessing. So he's four home games, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, LSU, Tennessee, four road games, Texas, Missouri, Auburn, and A&M in
Dallas. So he wants to drop. He wants to drop Alabama. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he wants to make sure he doesn't want to have Alabama or Georgia. Well, okay. Sure, that'd be fine. I'd like that too.
That's an okay draw. As far as you're concerned. All right. So I've got. You want to go to John, and then we'll do our schedules.
Sure, we'll do that.
Let's get to John.
Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. Hey, John.
Hey, guys, I heard you mentioning the schedules, and you were having a good conversation there. Two thoughts I had. I wish Auburn would go to the SEC and say, hey, by the way, we're going to Athens at 25 to make up for 12 and 13 when we had home games against Georgia, and get Georgia and Alabama back on opposing home and away schedules. Is that at all a possibility? Is that something Cohen could actually make a charge on and get something done on that?
Oh, if Auburn wanted to go there back-to-back years, I'm sure Georgia would say, come on, let's do it and even it up.
I'm saying in that point, and then you would get Alabama and Georgia back home and away on opposing season. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, although as long as they keep them separated, I'm not as adamant about having them one home, one away. I mean, if you're able to add an Oklahoma or a Texas in the years that you've got LSU on your home schedule, I think you're able to sell season tickets either way.
I do not know if John Cohen or Hugh Freeze have commented publicly about switching the Georgia series to where Auburn would host Georgia and go to Tuscaloosa and vice versa.
I haven't heard them ask that.
I don't know if anyone's asked either of them about their feelings on it. I'm okay with it, as long as I want the game spread apart. I don't want you going to Athens and a week later going to Tuscaloosa.
Or 2 weeks.
You know, in situations like I like the notion of, in fact, I kind of like, you know, if Bama's always going to be the last regular season game, then maybe Georgia should usually be your first conference game or somewhere in that. So somewhere along those lines, like I don't hate that as a new tradition, but I do not know as far as the administration if they've said anything about trying to adjust that series.
Yeah, the only thought I had is it just seems like if you go to Georgia and Tuscaloosa every other year, you really put yourself at an extreme disadvantage of actually competing for the SEC championship. Well, maybe you have a better shot if you split them up. Just one other thought I had, though, guys.
If you win the other 10, you're probably making the playoff.
Yeah, and if you can bring in talent that can compete with those two on a regular basis, you can win at one of those two places. I mean, that's the thing. Auburn's just been so behind in talent, they've had to rely on either the home crowd or a miracle or something like that to be able to beat, especially Georgia.
Although to John's point, it's not just Auburn. I mean, very few teams. I'd love to know the combined home record of Bama and Georgia, you know, in conference over the last 10 years is like 1,000,002 or something. So I mean,
Auburn's record against Georgia is what, 3-15 in the last 18?
Yeah.
Last win in Athens was 2005.
2005, yeah.
Yeah, I just had one other thought. I saw Josh Pate. He has a show covering college football, and I thought he made an interesting point real quick, and I'll let you go on this, but he said if he was a commissioner for a day, he would actually go to the TV networks and say, we're going to leave money on the table, we're eliminating a 30-second commercial every TV timeout. I would love to hear someone actually ask Sankey and some of these guys, would you ever consider doing something for the fans? Because is it not a little bit hypocritical for these guys to rail against NIL, but yet they try to milk the television networks out of every single penny they can at the expense of fans? I mean, CBS college football is on the SEC on CBS is just unwatchable. Just too many damn commercials. I don't know how anyone has the patience to sit through that. That was my only other point. I appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate it, John. Well, the good thing is you won't have to worry about watching them on CBS anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's the unfortunately the byproduct of when the networks are paying what they're paying to broadcast these games, they want to fill the broadcast with promos and commercials, sell the ad time, and use the rest of the available time to promote other things going on the network. And I don't know, as the price of the rights go up, I don't know if that's going to change from the network's point of view.
Well, you can change the way that you're doing commercials, though. You can do it the way that you do with professional sports, and you can have some quick commercials and things running while the game is going on instead of taking breaks.
I was
going
to say, like, extra points, you know, like when you're watching a golf tournament and they go small screen and then a commercial everywhere else.
You're watching, you're watching it in the game while the teams are back in the huddle. Here's a quick word from so-and-so, and it's a 10-second spot, and boom, you get it there, and you don't slow the game or stop the game.
What's become an innovation in the NFL over the last 2 years or so that was not part of the game before that is going to commercial break during replay reviews. When a play is being reviewed by the officials, they'll go, and I think it's bled over into college football as well, where rather than showing a bunch of replays of the play in question, they go to commercial and use that minute or minute and a half to fill in more ad time, which is, you know, that's a small nitpick, but you know,
there are ways to do it without having to take away too many plays from the game or whatever.
But I don't know if the number of commercials or the number of per hour is
going
to go away. If anything, it feels like the amount of plays we're going to get is going to go down. You know, they're going to find ways to tinker with that. But they're not. Yeah, they're not touching the ad time.
Need to get to our first break.
Speaking of which, it's time for a commercial break.
Yeah, that's right. We do. We're a little late, as a matter of fact. Need to get to that first break. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Carter. Dan, going to scoot out in a few minutes. So who do you have for your eight conference games?
All right,
so
the games I really want on the schedule, home games against LSU, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. I'm a little, you know, I could be convinced of what to do with that fourth home game.
It ought to be a winnable game.
I kind of want the Florida Gators to come to Auburn. I'm gonna go with Florida as the fourth home game in 24. And I know that in the point system over the last 5 years,
that's gonna be brutal.
But then I got Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and South Carolina as the four road games.
So I have Arkansas,
South Carolina.
You've got the 14 and 15 teams.
We play Vandy in 23. I didn't want to repeat it.
Yeah. So Auburn would play over the last 5 years. Now that obviously we're not counting this coming season because we don't know what everybody does. But over the last five seasons, you would have Auburn playing the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams.
Okay.
And then
15, 16. Or 14, 15.
12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 12, 14, 15.
Okay.
That ain't too balanced.
That's not too balanced.
But you might as well continue being Auburn, playing a tougher schedule than anybody.
Right, although you also want Florida on the schedule because you suspect that they're not going to be one of the five best teams in the SEC in 2024.
Yeah, and I had like South Carolina and Vandy, though.
Right, and I thought about Vandy, but I bumped Vandy because Auburn plays them in Do you think Florida will be okay?
I think Florida be better than Vandy.
Would you rather have okay? How about this?
I would hope.
Would you rather have Florida on the schedule than Tennessee in 2024? Because those numbers say that Tennessee is a more winnable game than Florida.
That's true. That's right. Because I haven't included this year and dropped 4 years ago either.
I could balance
when this, I do that. That's going to change.
I could balance this schedule and make it easier for Auburn.
That's
with those
if we're
numbers.
Playing this year.
No. But I could balance it out by removing Florida and adding Tennessee. Right, like that would balance it
if we're doing it for 2023.
Yeah. So I'm thinking.
So when we get to 2024, I don't think so.
Maybe putting Florida on the schedule will look a little better after this.
Oh, I think so.
Fair. As well. So I'm thinking LSU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Florida as the four home games for Auburn in 2024.
What is the easiest game of those four?
Ooh. Will you say them again?
Either LSU, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Florida.
Those are the home games. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What's the easiest of those four was the question from Bill.
That's a tough question.
Florida right now.
Might say Florida. Who knows? It might be Oklahoma.
Florida and Oklahoma might both be in year one of a new head coach in 2024. Who knows what Arkansas season looks like?
I got to feel like Venables with the just the fact that I don't know anything about what this Big 12 is going to be, that he's going to successfully navigate one more year.
History would tell you Arkansas is the answer to that question.
Yes.
Yes.
And also Arkansas, this is KJ Jefferson's last year. Arkansas is going to have to figure out a quarterback situation.
That's Arkansas with a new quarterback.
In 2024, maybe the answer is Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point.
So I'm thinking.
And Rocket Sanders will be gone too. I saw some mock drafts. I was looking at the other day, had him in the first round.
Yeah, I like Rocket
Sanders. How about that?
Yeah, so I'm thinking.
A running back, yeah.
So that's LSU, who we suspect will be pretty good based on everything.
Yeah, I got a feeling they'll be pretty good.
On the board.
Yep. They'll
and then
be
three,
pretty good.
And three relative wild cards as your four home games.
Yeah, my prediction. LSU will not have a new coach in 2024.
No, I think that's safe. Yeah, and then the four road games, Bama, Georgia. On the other two, a lot of different things you could do. I went Ole Miss and South Carolina. South Carolina, I feel like for balance because they're one of the two.
You just like Ole Miss because of the parties.
Yeah, it does feel like. Although I don't go to Oxford all that often, I think other people might appreciate that. The folks that go to those games, but I think you could put a lot of different teams on the schedule for different reasons. But I think there'd be angles to that Ole Miss Auburn game in 2024 with Hugh Freeze and Kiffin.
Is Lane still going to be at Ole Miss in 2024?
Is he the head coach at Florida?
He might be the head coach of Florida in 2024. That'd be crazy.
How many SEC schools could I still think Dan Lanning.
Do you turn down Florida if you're the head coach at Ole Miss?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, I guess you don't. Well, it's more to me. It's more of a question of does Florida offer him the job over somebody else that would take it first?
Does Florida think they could win a lot with Lane Kiffin over the next?
I'm sure they do, but I just don't see
Scott Strickland hiring. Maybe there's a new AD. I don't see Scott hiring Lane.
But, I mean, Bill, we were talking about this during the break. I don't know if we said it over the air, but, Dan Lanning at Oregon. I'd offer Dan Lanning the Florida job before I'd offer
Dan Lanning will, I mean, it'll take a lot of money, but he'll leave Oregon. It's not like he's I don't think he's planning on staying.
Someone with a connection to Kirby Smart would be really like you could see why Florida would think
Dan Lanning's got a connection with Nick Saban and Kirby.
That's
Smart.
A shot across the bow for one reason or another. Yeah, for sure.
The only I guess tweak I would personally
make for
your road games would be Kentucky on the road rather than South Carolina, just because I feel like you've played South Carolina a lot here recently and. You haven't been at Kentucky since 2010.
No, that's probably
fair,
right.
Yeah. I mean, since
Cam was horizontal.
That damages the balance of the schedule, too, because now you're taking the number 15 team over the last few seasons off and adding.
Replacing it with like number six.
Yeah. I mean, Kentucky's won a lot.
So you're only going to play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 over the last.
I mean, that's one of those where I felt like some Auburn fans are sitting there waiting, thinking they're going to see it tomorrow.
Want
Vandy back on the schedule in 24, and maybe you do. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. I figured you needed Arkansas and South Carolina if you weren't going to have Vandy there.
I'm really curious to know what. Kentucky is going to be in 24 because at that point, Devin Leary's gone. We really don't know what he's going to be like coming off the pec injury and anything, but his best version's really, really good.
Oh, playing the projection game with
him? Yeah. It's just like I kind of the same way you were thinking about Arkansas, like they're going to be without their two best quarterbacks.
Liam Cohen's around, though. I mean, he's back.
Let's connect these dots. Could Mark Stoops get a call from Oklahoma? I mean,
Florida.
I mean, are we sure Mark Stoops is there in 2024, or is a place that thinks he can win a little bit more?
I don't think he generates enough excitement at Florida.
I think you're right.
I think the last
Oklahoma, I think he would at Oklahoma.
The last name helps
at Oklahoma for sure.
Or if Oklahoma poaches somebody, does somebody look at Mark Stoops as like, you know what I mean? Like, do dominoes start falling that pull Mark Stoops away from Kentucky?
Who could Oklahoma?
Heupel.
Oh, absolutely.
Former Oklahoma quarterback, Josh Heupel.
Absolutely. Josh Heupel, man. I mean,
Dykes is a good one, too, but Heupel's the dream.
Heisman finalist at Oklahoma. Yeah.
I just was thinking of other school or other coaches that they would, I guess, put on a list, and Dykes would have to be on
there,
right?
Okay, how about this, Bill? If you're Tennessee, who's the first call? Who's the first call post-Heupel?
I mean,
Dykes?
For
Peyton Manning?
There's no telling.
Peyton Manning?
For the laughs, Kiffin?
Bill, were you thinking Peyton Manning's not a crazy idea?
I'm thinking they would definitely call Peyton.
I think they'd call Peyton Manning.
And then ask Peyton, who can we get?
What do you think?
I mean, they tried to hire Gruden like four times, right?
Yeah, that one's...
Well, I know you're not going there, but I'm just saying, like, they go pie in the sky as quickly as they can, and Manning will probably be on that
list. Dan Lanning is going to be at the top of a lot of people's lists in the Southeast, whether or not they can get him. But, I mean, that's going to be... It's sort of the race to Dan Lanning,
Jimbo,
I think.
Jimbo could be available. You know, someone could...
God. Yeah, A&M could go after him,
too. Do you want that?
Well, you know, we're not even thinking about the possibility that A&M could be in this bidding war, too.
Oh, Texas A&M has a couple of more 7-8-win seasons.
Oh, no. Texas A&M has a first six games where Jimbo probably needs to be 4-2. We talked about the first half of that schedule is not easy. There's games with Miami, Auburn, Arkansas, and Alabama.
They are, I think, four it's the at first Miami six. Two this year.
Yeah, because... I mean, they have four losable games in their first six, and I think Jimbo needs to be 4-2, or that Alabama game could be his last game as the head coach of Texas A&M.
You also added the most like volatile human in college football in Bobby Petrino to your staff, and was just like, yeah, this just think fix he could be all the interim. Our problems.
Do you think Urban's done, as a college coach? Do you think Urban Meyer has never coached college football again? Because I think if Urban wanted to be a college football coach again and convince people he was motivated and healthy and ready to do it, like I even with some of the scary things about his resume, I think there'd be a program willing to go get Urban Meyer and bring him in. But I wonder if he's content being a TV guy for the next 10 years, and maybe the experience in Jacksonville is going to ward him away. Because, there's a couple of places that envision themselves as superpowers. You know, we were talking about Tech, we were talking about Oklahoma, we were talking about Florida. I think A&M's on that list as well as a place that could be.
They
envision themselves.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't have
a superpowers.
They haven't sniffed it yet.
Well, they don't have a superpowers trophy case.
Right.
But they
have a superpowers trophy case, but it's empty.
It's empty. It doesn't have trophies in it. Good point. But I think that's another place that could be absolutely in the market for a new head coach if things go south.
If you're Oregon and Dan Lanning gets poached, all of a sudden you've had three straight coaches that get poached from you. Right. How do you follow that up?
You stop hiring SEC guys.
Do you go get Urban Meyer?
Quit going after Southern guys.
Do you say at that point, okay, well, we just got a third straight coach poached. Let's
say that
go get Urban
times.
Meyer.
Coach poached.
That's all. I mean, if they want, I mean,
like
that
you would
be,
have to go get a bigger name somehow.
Or someone, someone with Oregon ties,
that would be less likely to leave. Someone that's got,
you know, Wilcox
ties.
Wilcox is an Oregon grad. The Cal head coach is, and that's somebody who
he hasn't won enough at Cal,
but they tried to. There was a push for him when they ended up hiring Dan Lanning. There were folks that thought Oregon grad, he's winning some at Cal, but it's a different situation, Berkeley versus Oregon.
Hey, you know, Brian,
maybe
Harsin's
can pull it
available.
Off. Chris Peterson, is he done?
I don't know.
Because if he's not, I'm calling him an Oregon.
I was just saying, if you want to get somebody that
we are spinning
that would be
the
happy
wheel
to stay
of coaches
in the Northwest.
That like retired for health and family reasons, saying, "Hey, you want to come back?"
Well, I mean, can they win?
That's what matters.
What kind of legend retires once? Right? Like, come on. You got to come out of retirement a couple of times. Who decides once? Oh, I'm done. Everybody comes out of retirement multiple times, right? Boxing.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Dan, are you heading out?
Yeah, man? I'm out of here. Appreciate it, guys.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Carter and I, love for you to join in the final 20 minutes or so of the Tuesday Drive.
Let's get back to the drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so here on the Tuesday Drive. Dan, heading out to... spent a little time with some family that's in town. So it's Bill and Carter here for the final couple of segments. And as we come back, breaking news, Auburn adding another commitment to the 2024 class and picking up a speedy wide receiver.
Yeah, Bryce Kane, somebody from Mobile, 5'11", 170. Not the biggest guy right now, but... He's really fast. He ran a 4.4 flat at Auburn's camp this past weekend. I heard some people say that it was a 4.39, and they rounded him up to a 4.4.
Well, I've seen multiple people said he was by far the standout of the receivers at the camp.
Oh, yeah. The clips of him at the camp, he looked awesome. He looked like he had some chemistry already building with Walker White. And apparently, from what I've heard, Walker White was just like – with him nonstop the entire camp, just like didn't leave his side. But he's somebody who we, on our show, on the line earlier today, we had Christian Clemente on. He was talking about how he's only played 1 year of football so far in his life. I mean, he's a baseball guy who became a football guy this past year.
Well, you see a guy, I mean, that can run like that, you're going to have coaches going, hey, just try this and see, and, you know, see how you like it.
Yeah, and Christian told us that he might be a little bit faster than that 4.4 flat. He might have a better time that he has run in the past, but this is somebody who I think on paper right now, no, it's not going to blow you away. You may look at it or the average.
Yeah, because he's going to show up as a
three-star, like 30th player in the state on 359th wide receiver. I think he's a little bit higher, maybe on 247. But yeah, I mean, I think you look at him and it doesn't blow you away. But this is somebody considering the very small amount of football he's played in his career, his life, I could see him being a pretty significant riser if he has a big senior year. I mean, on 247, he's the 144th receiver and the 43rd player in the state of Alabama in the composite. They've got him 682 overall in the country. I could see him being a guy who very easily could play his way into four-star status, and I think that this is a big commit for Auburn, and the fact that the staff identified him very quickly as somebody they wanted, I think it says a lot for sure.
Yeah, and I'm looking at all the different sites. Rivals has got him in the three-star as well, but they don't have him ranked numbers-wise and things like that, so we will see. But
it's we're in that weird portion of the cycle where, like,
well, I mean,
some sites don't have a guy ranked at all. Some have him just, like, with a three-star, but nothing else. Others will have him as like a really high four-star. Like there was I think his name may be like Reese Baker. There was an offensive lineman that was on campus this past week that I was talking to somebody about, and he's not ranked anywhere. He wasn't ranked anywhere going into the weekend, and now he's a three-star on 247, but nowhere else. And I don't even think he has like a state ranking or a position ranking yet or anything like that.
Well, a lot of that has to do with who's had a chance to see.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I mean,
you know, if he hasn't been at some other camps and somebody who has some input saw him this past weekend, that's why he'd be ranked. It's a lot. There's so many more people that are scouting now and are mm-hmm. doing the rankings. I mean, most of these players who are starting to pop up here, they'll be ranked in multiple places before long. I mean, mm-hmm. because word will get out, and then other people will go and scout them, check out their film, things like that. It's not like the old days when there'd just be numbers pulled out of thin air. It'd be, you heard about this guy? What do you want to rate him? Oh, I don't know about whatever. I mean, I seriously had that. I had a guy ask me. I mean, way, way back in the day, back when there were just a couple of recruiting experts, I had Max Emfinger called me and asked me, because they knew that Auburn was near Montgomery, called me and asked me about Andre Bruce.
There you go.
And Andre had been a basketball player primarily, and he wanted on a scale of 10. He said, on a scale of 10, what would you rate him? I said, well, he's a huge, really good athlete that moves well, but haven't really seen him play football. You know, I felt like I was rating a record or something. I said, I'd give him at least an 8. And lo and behold, the next day on Max's Max's hotline, he had a new prospect, and it was Andre Bruce, ranked at 8. And it's like, oh, well, gee, I know how I should have given him a 9 since I felt like he was headed to Auburn. But, I mean, the word will get out. Bryce Kane, I'm sure his stock will rise. And I heard Christian a little bit as I was coming in, And yeah, I think Auburn will have a few more commitments that'll be coming. Oh, yeah. This is the time when you're getting the players in for camps, the either the 7-on-7s or the elite camps, things like that. And then with Big Cat coming up the end of July, by the time
you'd want to be at like 15, right?
Yeah, by the end of July. I was going to say by the time you're ready to start practice in August, yeah, you want to at least be at a dozen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a dozen might be a little light.
Well, it depends on how many are you planning on signing this year.
That's fair.
Because it used to be you'd want to get, mm-hmm. 18 so that you on your way to 25. But if you're only thinking you're going to sign 20, then 12 to 15 is probably where you're going to be.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this will probably be, and I said this earlier today on my show, I think you're going to see Auburn probably go heavy in the portal again this next cycle.
I would say not as heavy.
I think it'll be close. I think it'll be closer than we think right now.
What do we got, 20 this year?
I think it's 2021.
Okay, I would think
around there.
I would think 14 to 18.
I think it'll be closer to the top end of that number.
But part of it's going to depend on how well you're doing with those high schoolers that you really, really want to bring in and feel like can be difference makers.
Yeah.
Because if you feel like, man, we're going to have a great signing class, then maybe you don't feel like you have as many holes. A lot of it's also going to depend on how things go this fall and how some of the players that are trying to work for playing time play and step up. I mean, I think what you'd love to do in a perfect world, you'd like to each year cut back a little bit on the transfer portal, mm-hmm. to get to the point where you look and you see what Alabama, what Georgia, what LSU are doing, where they can go out and pick and choose, try to cherry pick 4 to 8 players to fill spots that they have and hope that you've got everything else filled from within.
I think my kind of mindset for this next cycle is you're probably going to have a top 12 transfer class still, because I think it's still going to have to be decently big, because, I mean, if you just look at the offensive line,
it's a bunch of guys that won't
senior transfers. Right. That are all going to be going out the door. And then you look at receiver, you brought in some veteran guys. Linebacker, you brought in some older guys. And, I mean, you got to think some guys are going to leave for the NFL. Like, Jarquez Hunter has a big year and can use that to follow in Tank Bigsby's footsteps and go pro after his junior year. Maybe some spots kind of open up. DB, I mean, corner, you could have 3 guys at nickel and corner go pro, and
you should.
Like, that's why I kind of have this. I think it'll be in that 16 to 18 range, kind of the higher end of what you were saying. And I think 24 is when you're going to really see Auburn start waning down and not signing a crazy amount of transfers.
Yeah, you'll have also had more time with the high schoolers that you're recruiting. I mean, you'll have been recruiting those guys for 2 years as opposed to just less than one right now on the kids that you're trying to sign for 24.
Do you think this next cycle, after he landed, 60 new players, Deion Sanders, do you think is it below 40 in this next cycle?
God, it better be, because if it's 40, then it's not been a great year. Because if he's having
I don't think he's having a great year. I think it's going to be miserable.
But I mean, how many of those guys that come in are going to go in, and when things don't go very well, how long are they going to want to hang around?
I don't know. I 100% agree.
I mean, the Deion show is going to be very interesting to watch.
We've never seen him be a head coach of a losing program, and when they're 3-9,
how's that going to work?
I want to know what the messaging is. Yeah. I want to know what he's putting out publicly, because it's always been about like building the culture, building the young men. We're winning games. Look what we're doing. If it turns really south, I'm curious to see what it's going to be.
It could be really, it'd be great. This is the reality show that I'd love to see the inside of, would be Colorado this year.
Their first 6 games What do you think their record is at TCU?
I've looked at it. I think 1-5 is probably.
And maybe, and I could see a world where they don't beat Colorado State.
Oh, I do too.
And but granted, I could also see a world where they don't beat Colorado State but beat Arizona State because year one in there as well.
It's
but
really
still.
Hard to see them 500 or better.
Oh, I don't think there's a chance. I mean, and there's some.
If they are, threes, then wow, everybody's going to go, let's just do this. Let's just turn the whole thing over then.
I mean, they're one of on three's, what, dark horse playoff teams, which I think is crazy.
That's insane.
Because you've got six pretty difficult games to start your schedule. And then in the back half of the schedule, you've got at UCLA, Oregon State, at Washington State, at Utah, with Arizona there in the middle. I think 3-9 is like...
No, they look like a 2-10, 3-9 yeah. is what they look like.
I mean, I think the ceiling is 4 wins for them.
Yeah, if they're bowl eligible, what
an
unbelievable year.
I think
it's
a heck of a job. And honestly, I'd be like, maybe he's building something awesome.
Yeah, maybe everybody should, you know, turn the roster over even more.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Tuesday Drive.
On The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of the Tuesday Drive. Been a fun show. Our thanks to Barrett Salee for joining us in hour number one. As we've speculated a little bit about who some of the opponents could be for 2024, it'll be tomorrow night on the SEC Network. So, all right, so Carter, all right, the College World Series field was set last night. The NBA playoffs are done. What do we watch now? I mean, tomorrow
That's
night, at
point.
Least we've got a schedule. I mean, tonight.
I mean, at least this weekend, you got the U.S. Open coming.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you got that.
Tonight, I guess it's the Subway Series, or if you're
a
fortunate
baseball,
enough to be
yeah,
able to watch
true.
The Braves, can they bounce back from that god-awful loss last night to the Tigers?
They went on such a run. What, they won 7 in a row and then dropped 1 to the Nationals to finish that series in the first game to this Tigers
Yeah, and
team.
They lost a couple of the A's. I mean, for
speaking of which, the A's
are hot.
Somebody.
Yeah, all of a sudden, the A's are, you know, they're still not very good.
Oh, but, no, they're horrible.
But, yeah, so, hey, thanks. Thanks for running the board and filling in today.
Absolutely.
We didn't even get to. We were going to talk. You just mentioned when
Kings
we were talking.
A six-game win streak, by the way. I didn't realize
yeah,
it was that many.
Yeah, saw that. But the end of the Texas-Stanford game last night.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable.
I can't imagine a worse way to lose a college baseball game. I know there's the New York like high school baseball game where the catcher drops the third strike, thinks he tags him, puts the ball in his pocket. Did you see that video? That doesn't really happen in college baseball, but I can't imagine a worse way to lose the game. How do three guys lose the ball like
well,
that?
Well, I mean,
the only one that saw it was the shortstop.
Yeah, and there was no way he could get to it. But, I mean, it happened in the regional, too, a couple of times where players completely lost it. And the folks out there at Stanford said, yeah, when it gets that time of day, you just can't see the ball. Well then he shouldn't play the game at that time.
The first game in that series, the center fielder for Stanford kept running into his outfielders, and it cost them the first game and allowed Texas to come back and win.
Yeah, well, it is what it is. That's one of the crazy things. That's one of the things about sports. You're liable to see something that you never thought you'd see or may never see again. All right, we're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Dan and I back with you. Jason Caldwell should be with us in hour number one. And, yes, we'll be looking forward to the SEC schedule and much more. We'll get Jason's thoughts on Auburn's commitment today and what else he expects as well. That's going to be on tomorrow's show, but we're out of time for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.